to adjudicate conflicts, all of the complexity of life which all of us face day to day. The prophet is not one who remains aloof at the pinnacle of transcendence, but who returns into the world with a positive, constructive, affirmative, inclusive vision. It is so easy to become jaded and cynical and pessimistic. But the prophet brings a passion that has come straight out of the very core of existence and brings that passion into the life of the community. The heritage of this aspect of prophecy is something that in the Sufi tradition we call chivalry, futuwa. And that word suggests youthfulness. But it doesn't mean only the youthfulness of the body. It doesn't mean the youthfulness of the body. It means youthfulness of spirit. But among young people, often, one finds a certain vibrancy, enthusiasm, a vision of purpose and possibility. And as we go through life, sometimes we become worn down and disheartened and dissuaded, and we just retreat into a very small, narrow scope of life. So this futuwa means refreshing and reawakening that youthful, positive, optimistic, visionary quality to believe that yes, change is possible. All of the signs of danger, of imminent destruction that are about us, horrible as they are just an incentive to come together, to answer the need, to bring the transformation that is truly possible. This is the spirit of futuwa, spirit of chivalric youth. The Sufis speak often of chivalry. One of them said that the fatah, the practitioner of this path, is the one who has no enemy. To be a warrior with no enemy. Not against anyone or anything. One of the Sufis said that the reason that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was the epitome of chivalry was that on the day of resurrection, on the day of judgment, everyone, all souls will be shaking and crying out, me, me, worried about its salvation, worrying about its hereafter. And the prophet will say, not me, me, but my community, my community, my community. That is the essence of chivalry, to put the community first. One's neighborhood, one's circle of friends and acquaintances and passers-by, all who come within the field of one's life, one is interrelated to them. We cannot ever cut ourselves off. We are mutually committed. We belong to the same project. We're all in this together. My community, and whoever meets me belongs to my community, and I belong to his or to hers. For me, when I think of chivalry, I cannot but help think especially of my own aunt, whom I never met, my father's sister. She grew up in the atmosphere of the family home, which was full of poetry and philosophy and music and mysticism. But the world presented the family with, and presented all of Europe with, a horrible situation with the advent of Nazism, the Nazi conquest of France, where the family lived, and she and her siblings retreated to England only to prepare to meet the challenge. She volunteered. Her name was Noor Anisa. She was very slight, very sensitive, very refined. She was a storyteller to children. She was a musician and a poet. But she volunteered for the most dangerous mission conceivable. She was trained as an operative to go into the underground, into the resistance in occupied France. And she was parachuted in just at the time when her colleagues in the underground, one after another, were being arrested. And very soon after arriving as an underground operator to communicate information for the resistance to the Allies, she had to do this work by means of a radio transmission, and she had to do it outside amidst all of the passing Gestapo. Even once she had one of the members of the Gestapo helped her set it up, not knowing that was her courage. But she was betrayed. She was sold. Her name was sold for a pittance. She was taken. She was interrogated. She was imprisoned. She was beaten and beaten again and again. She made some valiant attempts at escape, but was recaptured. She was taken to a prison. She was chained to the wall, tortured. This mystical, fine, slight, young woman was exposed to all of the brutality, all of the cruelty of the world, and was isolated in a dungeon, chained to the wall. And she never once revealed any information. Even her own name was never revealed, as much as she was tortured. And she was a light in the prison. Afterward, the guard, years later, he underwent a spiritual awakening. Because of her. In the end, she was brought to Dachau, and she was shot and thrown in the oven. I have been to Dachau and seen the ovens and the cells and the unimaginable horror of what humans can do to human beings. Those buildings are the testament of the depths of human brutality. But somehow she answered the darkness with a light that could never be extinguished. She didn't let them win. And what survives is her light. What is triumphant is her memory. What is triumphant is that commitment that she showed when at the very end, her final words as she knelt down were liberté. Liberty, freedom. F- freedom. Her path was the path serving freedom, giving her life for freedom. That is chivalry. And that is a path that all of us can follow, each in our own way, come what may. And we don't know what will come. But let it be that as we leave this world, we can feel that we knew the value of freedom. We did what we could for freedom. I'd like to end with a poem I've written very recently. And the poem comes out of the sense of living day to day in the awareness of these beings of splendor, these beings of truth and power and beauty, whose presence I always seek to feel directly, because I know that when I feel the presence of these beings, it enables me to more fully embody my own purpose and my own destiny. And in reading the Bible, I came across a verse which so beautifully articulates that sense of being surrounded by the prophets, the witnesses. It is in the letter to Hebrews, where the question is asked, what is faith? What is faith? And the answer to the question is, faith is to be found in the story of this prophet and this prophet and this prophet. The prophets are named. And in the end it is said, and we, surrounded by so vast a cloud of witnesses, what is our responsibility? A cloud of witnesses. A cloud of witnesses. That is the word from the Bible that resonated with me so powerfully. I felt I had to give some expression to this inspiration. From the perspective of the whole planetary lineage of the prophets. And the question that I pose in this poem is not here what is faith, but what is wisdom? A call to wisdom. And what is wisdom? Wisdom is seeing the whole in the parts. And in the whole, seeing the holy. It is for their wisdom that the prophets and prophetesses of the past are remembered. By wisdom, we receive the universe as the revelation of the eternal and infinite, inscribed on the scroll of time and space. By wisdom, Adam and Eve were led to taste the fruit of knowledge and to step from the narrow garden of innocence into the wide world of experience. Wisdom made Inanna descend to the depths and rise again, to die in darkness and to resurrect in the spring of life. By wisdom, Rama befriended the monkey Hanuman. And by wisdom, Sita found solace in all green things. Wisdom made Krishna dance with 100 gopis. And each danced with him alone. By wisdom, Radha tasted the essences of separation and union and the shades between. By wisdom, Shiva took his seat high above the world. And by wisdom, Parvati brought her yogi lord down to hearth and home. By wisdom, Buddha beheld emptiness in form and form in emptiness and made love, compassion, joy, and peace his practice. With wisdom, Abraham welcomed weary travelers under the wings of the Shekinah. By wisdom, Sarah saw without eyes, and Hagar heard without ears. Wisdom made Zoroaster answer the call of Mazda to stand against the right of might and for the right of light. By wisdom, Moses led the tribes of Israel from bondage, and by wisdom, Miriam sealed their freedom with song. By wisdom, Mary gave her fiat to the incarnation of spirit, and wisdom made Jesus plead in Gethsemane, "Stay awake with me." Wisdom carried Muhammad beyond the galaxies and returned him to earth to point a finger toward the oneness of being. Others too, countless others, could and should be named. Men and women of every continent and era, who quenched their mortal thirst at the fount of creation, only to find themselves filled with the unquenchable thirst of the immortal Creator. In the name of the One they lived and loved, suffered and died, and in devotion to the One they live on. And what of ourselves? Having so vast a cloud of witnesses around us, we must shake off our slumber and awaken to wisdom. Not in the placid hereafter, but here in the seething flux of life's dream. This shifting dreamscape is the place of tryst. Here, the One without second seeks intimate converse with an other who is no other than the self-same, ceaselessly seeking, endlessly finding, ever transforming, yet everlastingly changeless One. Thank you for your presence, your kind, open-hearted, open-minded attention. It has been a pleasure to be with you. May I ask that we close with a prayer which I will recite and We may stand for this. I don't want to be up here as I lead this prayer. I want to be right with you. O Thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear Thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us Thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us Thy great goodness. Teach us Thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide us. Send us the peace of Thy divine Spirit, and unite us all in Thy perfect being.